Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I always waited for him to come through the door. You know, when you don't have that closure, you just wait for them to just come through the door. I kept in touch with the detectives for many years, and then it went to the cold case. You know, it went to the cold case department, and I touched base with the cold case detective. It's been a while since I called them, and they just say there's nothing new, nothing happening. But again, I watch the shows, and it just takes one person to pull that cold case file off the shelf and dig into it with a new set of eyes, and maybe they can figure something out.
On August 22, 2000, 39-year-old Joey Gale Ledlow left his job as a welder in Phoenix, Arizona around 2:30 p.m. Joey never made it home, and he was never seen again. A couple weeks later, his truck was found abandoned in the desert. The truck was trashed and the windows were busted out. In the months leading up to his disappearance, Joey was surrounded by a new group of people. People he didn't know very well and may have been involved in nefarious things. After he disappeared, the detective handling his case went to great lengths to try to figure out if these people could have been involved in his disappearance. But over 18 years later, Joey is still missing and his case remains unsolved. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 141 of The Vanished, Joey Gale Ledlow's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. I was contacted by Joey's daughter, Amy, several months ago to see if I would cover his case. Amy was just 6 when her father disappeared and has been deeply affected by his absence. Since Amy was so young, I interviewed her along with her mother, Joey's wife at the time, Rochelle. There isn't much information about Joey or his disappearance online. He never received any media coverage. I was, however, lucky enough to be granted access to his case file. In the months leading up to Joey's disappearance, he wasn't living at home with his wife and daughter. Joey had struggled with addiction and went to live temporarily in a facility to try to get clean. Here's Rochelle talking about Joey's disappearance.
He was in a transitional living facility. He had gotten into drugs, and that's probably why there's not a whole lot out there, because, you know, I know that you're aware because I listen to your podcast all the time, and you say yourself that they don't really do a whole lot of media and stuff for, you know, people that have made bad choices. But he was in a transitional living. It was called TLC. At the time he came up missing, and he would go there. He could leave there to work during the day, but they would go there at night and they would have meetings and stuff. And he was working on, you know, getting clean. And he had, left that day on August 22nd, and then he never came back to the facility, and everything was at the facility. He had his toolbox that he took everywhere with him. You know, he was a certified welder, and that's where he came missing from.
Rochelle told me about her relationship with Joey in the months before he disappeared.
We were together. I was at the point where if he didn't get straightened out, you know, I was going to be having to make some decisions, but he was working on getting straightened out. The problem with that is those centers, they're just not a lot of good people in there. Some of them are there because they have to be there. You know, he just met some bad people in there. So, but we were definitely together, and, you know, he was in there trying to get straightened out. He had struggled with addiction for a while, and he's not a bad person. He just, you know, made some bad choices, and he had a sickness, and he was working on getting better. He was working, you know, he held a job, even though with, you know, his addiction, and he was an excellent welder. His employer loved him. He was a wonderful father. You know, I mean, the addiction obviously affected things, and he was a good husband. When he was clean, he just needed to get straightened out, you know.
When Rochelle didn't hear from Joey for several days and he didn't show up for work or even to pick up his paycheck, she became concerned. That's when she notified the police that he was missing. She wasn't sure if he had left willingly. Maybe he was using and didn't want her to know. Joey's truck went missing along with him. The first break in the case came when the police located it.
2 weeks later, they found his pickup truck in the desert over by the Phoenix International Raceway. And they called me, and I went down there, and they said it looked like it had been there a couple of weeks, which would have put it about the time that he came up missing. And they said since it had been there a couple of weeks and people had been through it, that's an area down there at the time where people would take their four-wheelers and go, you know, riding through there. And so that was the problem with the case, too. It was there was no DNA. There was nothing that they could work with on the truck. Now, they did bring cadaver dogs down, and then the search dogs, like the hound dogs, just to see if they could find them. It's just all, it's hard to explain, but it's all like sand, and it's a huge area on both sides of the road. And there's a river that runs through there. So they didn't know if maybe he had done some drugs and just kind of wandered off and got lost and, you know, passed away, or they searched all in that area and they didn't find anything, but they did not process his truck.
Joey's truck was found about a 22-mile drive from where he had last been seen at work. The area is a place that people often go out to go shooting or to ride ATVs. The truck was estimated to be approximately one-third of a mile off the road and into the desert. The truck was found up against a hill of sand. It appeared to be stuck. The driver's side front tire was in about 2 feet of soft sand. The detective noted that there was considerable damage to the interior and exterior of the truck. All the windows had been busted out, and there appeared to be possible bullet holes. The windshield was still in place, but was also shattered. The steering column appeared to be popped, and the hood was propped up. The gas tank was open with black tubing hanging out of it. It looked like someone had tried to siphon the gas out of the truck. They didn't see any signs of foul play at the scene. There was nothing like blood evidence, at least not that they could see. What they weren't sure of was how the truck got out to that area. Had Joey driven there himself or someone else entirely? If you look at this area on a map, it's on the edge of town where it opens up to just endless desert. It isn't a place that's so remote that you couldn't walk for help, say if you had driven out there and gotten your truck stuck. But there was still a chance that Joey had wandered further into the desert. Perhaps he was high at the time and disoriented. So they searched for him out there, but they didn't find any trace of Joey. Trying to figure out what happened to Joey wasn't easy. Since he had been living at that facility for only a couple of months, the people surrounding him were new to his life. They were also introducing him to other people who weren't living there. When the detective would go question someone, she was often told that Joey had been seen with someone. They only had a first name or a nickname. People seemed to come and go quite often from this transitional living facility, and once they left, they weren't always easy to track down. But the detective had a hunch that Joey had met with foul play, and she tried really hard to find evidence to prove it. When I cover someone who has a history of drug addiction, often the families voice their frustrations with the media because of the lack of coverage and also law enforcement for dismissing the case. But Joey's family felt as though the Phoenix Police Department cared about solving his case.
They did treat it as a missing persons right from the get-go. That is one thing I have to say with the Phoenix detective. It was Jan Butcher at the time, and she immediately took it as a missing persons because he left his last paycheck at his job. Everything was still at the center. He didn't have anything. And they said with his lifestyle, something would have come up. He would have used his bank card. He would have used something. So they immediately treated it as a missing person. She really, really did a lot of, she was out on the streets constantly doing every lead she got, she would track it down. And I know with your podcast, a lot of the families weren't happy with the police investigation. Even though Joey's case isn't solved, I really do have to say that she really did a lot of hard work because these people that she was tracking down to talk to, they didn't have steady jobs. You know, they didn't have really a home. They went from place to place. And if somebody told her, well, you know, so-and-so might know something about it, she would do everything to find that person just because, you know, who she was talking to. And they didn't like the police presence. They would never really give her anything.
When the search of the area where Joey's truck was found turned up nothing, Detective Butcher began investigating the case further. She spoke to Joey's employer, who described him as a dependable worker. If he ever missed work, he would always call. Joey had two paychecks waiting for him at work, which was very unusual. His boss wasn't aware that Joey had any issues with drugs. Next, she spoke with the superintendent at Joey's work. He too described Joey as dependable, always early to work, rarely missed a day, and would always call. To his knowledge, Joey didn't use drugs or alcohol. From speaking to the people at his work, it appeared that Joey was good at keeping his drug activity separate from work. We know that Joey was last seen on August 22nd, but according to the superintendent, Joey called and left a message around 4:30 a.m. on the 23rd saying he needed the day off. The detective asked him if Joey sounded different, and he replied that he sounded tired, but that's to be expected at 4:30 in the morning. He also brought up something that becomes important later on in this story. He said that recently, Joey had done some things that he thought were kind of odd. He had purchased some tools and then was in a hurry to sell them. He ended up selling them for less than the purchase price. He also mentioned that since Joey had been living at TLC, he started hanging out with guys who worked for a local limo service. After Joey was reported missing, he had heard that some of the people from the limo service had drug connections. Detective Butcher went back to Rochelle to see if she had any more information to offer. She and Joey had been married for about 7 years and had one daughter together, 6-year-old Amy. Joey had been married previously and had 3 children who lived out of state. Rochelle told Detective Butcher that their relationship had been fine until she had confronted him about not attending his substance abuse meetings. Rochelle was frustrated and wanted Joey to be clean and there for her and their daughter. She also had a piece of paper with a man's name on it. Leading up to his disappearance, he had been mentioning the name Mario quite often, but Rochelle had never met Mario. A couple days before Joey disappeared, he had told Rochelle about a scheme that Mario was allegedly running, going around to various businesses and purchasing merchandise with stolen credit cards and checks. Somehow, he was getting account numbers and creating fake checks on a computer. Rochelle didn't know all of the details, but something fishy was definitely going on. She also mentioned to Detective Butcher that Joey wouldn't have abandoned his truck in the desert. It was his lifeline. He had just spent $180 on parts and then spent 8 hours working on the truck Saturday before he went missing. Why would someone put in that much effort if they were planning to ditch the truck in the desert just days later? Detective Butcher visited TLC, where Joey had been living. She learned that the person Rochelle had mentioned, Mario, was also living at the facility. She spoke to the district manager, who told her that he never had any problems with Joey. He never got into any fights with other residents. Joey had also passed his drug tests. If a resident fails a drug test, they're discharged from the facility. He mentioned that Mario didn't drive and relied on Joey to drive him around. A TLC resident spoke to the detective, but he didn't know Joey very well. He just knew that Joey hung out with Mario a lot and would often give rides to different residents. He had heard various rumors about what happened to Joey. Everything from he was just out using again, he had overdosed, or just took off to another state. Detective Butcher contacted Joey's mom, Roxy, who also lived in another state. The last time that she remembered hearing from Joey was a phone call around the end of July. She said there was nothing out of the ordinary about this call. He was just asking about different family members and how they were doing. Joey's mom had called around to all of her other children, but none of them had heard from Joey. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Almost a month after Joey disappeared, Mario was arrested. He had credit cards belonging to several people in his wallet. This gave Detective Butcher a chance to go speak with him. He told her that he was surprised that she hadn't contacted him yet. He said he only knew Joey for about 4 to 6 weeks since they had met at TLC. He claimed to have no clue where Joey could be, but he expressed that Joey wouldn't have left his truck and tools behind. He wasn't sure exactly what day he had last spoken to Joey, but he remembered getting a call around 6:30 p.m. one evening. Joey said that he was still out in the field and asked that Mario let TLC know that he might be late. Mario mentioned a conversation that he had with Joey 3 days earlier. Joey allegedly told him that he picked up two girls from a halfway house and was going to drop them off with someone he referred to as his brother. He was going to leave them there for 2 nights before taking them to another halfway house. Mario said that he believed the two girls had something to do with his disappearance, but he never gave a reason as to why he believed that. One thing that Detective Butcher learned during her investigation was that the area where Joey's truck was found was an area that he was familiar with. She was told that leading up to his stay at TLC, he had been going on a drug binge every few months. This would last several days, and he would go out to the sand dunes, the same area where his truck was later found. Joey would use drugs out there, but never at home, and then he would return a few days later. Was it possible that he went out there to use drugs and just wandered off and succumbed to the elements? Or did someone who knew that Joey sometimes went out there to use leave the truck there to make it appear as though Joey had left it behind? Joey had a cell phone when he disappeared, and Rochelle received the bill after he went missing. She looked over the calls to see if there could be a clue. She found some numbers that she didn't recognize and decided to call them. She tried one number on September 30th around noon. A man answered, but said that he didn't know Joey. Later that same day, they received an incoming call that seemed rather suspicious.
I got a call from somebody at the, and it was at my house, and they said, "Is Joey there?" And I said, "No, he isn't." And they said, "Yeah, we know he isn't, bitch, and he's never coming back. We killed him," or something like that. And again, I let the detective know right away, and she tracked it to a payphone not too far from our house. But the cameras, it was at an Arco gas station, and the cameras weren't on the phone, the payphones. They were focused at the pumps, you know, so they couldn't get a picture of who it was that had called. But that was pretty scary.
When that call came in, they immediately dialed star 69 and were able to obtain the phone number so the detective could track it down. No one's ever been able to figure out if the two calls were connected because they weren't able to determine who placed the call. As the months wore on, Detective Butcher continued to pursue leads and try to speak to anyone she could find who had interacted with Joey in the time leading up to his disappearance. She kept finding acquaintances, people he had met through the other guys staying at TLC. They only had vague memories of brief conversations with Joey, nothing that really stood out or seemed relevant to his case. She went back and spoke with some of the men who had been staying at TLC in August of 2000, but they mostly had only rumors to pass along. Rumors like he had tried to help these two women and one had a boyfriend, or that he dumped the truck there and got a ride somewhere else, but nothing solid to go on. There was one consistent thing. Certain names kept being mentioned, including Mario and a man named Francisco. People were saying that they had seen the men with Joey's truck after he had disappeared. One of Joey's co-workers had mentioned that he had been hanging out with people from a local limousine service. Detective Butcher contacted the owner, and he was able to give her the name and contact information for Joey's friend. This friend had met him during his stay at TLC, but he had left the facility before Joey disappeared. The two continued to keep in touch. This friend also kept in touch with some of the other guys. Two different people from the facility told him that they had seen Mario and Francisco with Joey's truck after he disappeared. He also heard that someone at TLC was selling Joey's tools. One of the guys from the limousine service also mentioned someone else they thought Joey had been hanging out with. Detective Butcher found that this man was now incarcerated at a local prison, so she went to pay him a visit. This man had more information about Mario, Francisco, and the fraud scheme they were running. He said that Mario and Francisco were making forged checks on a computer and they were having Joey drive them around to local businesses so they could buy things to turn around and sell. He seemed to know quite a bit about this scheme. He said that they would go to places like Target or Walmart, use an account number about 5 times before moving on to a new one. This man learned more about the scheme after Joey vanished because Mario and Francisco had him drive them to a local Home Depot. This man also mentioned a credit card that Mario had somehow obtained. He had heard that Joey got the credit card, used it, and then disappeared. Mario and Francisco had told him that Joey asked for the credit card, stating that he would be back, but that he never returned, and his truck was later found in the desert. This friend wondered if Joey had gotten a new identity and had just taken off, but he wasn't sure. Detective Butcher investigated the fraud that Mario was involved in, looking to see if there could be anything that could be a clue in Joey's case. She was able to tie the fraud to a burglary that had occurred a week before Joey disappeared. The things that were taken included a cell phone, a gun, wine, and checks. 98 checks had been used from the 3 checkbooks that were stolen. The detective thought there could be a connection because that stolen cell phone had made some phone calls to numbers belonging to people Joey knew. But it also appeared that others were using the phone too. There were long conversations with people who were known friends of Mario, But when Detective Butcher tracked those callers down, they didn't know Joey. What they were able to find out was that the burglary was allegedly committed by three women, the victim's daughter and two of her friends. The victim's daughter just so happened to be dating Mario at the time. The women claimed that they gave Mario the phone and account information they were able to find regarding credit cards and checking accounts. One of the women involved in the crime stated that she didn't know Joey at all, but she remembered Mario and a man matching Francisco's description, driving a truck back in September. The truck she described sounded a lot like Joey's truck. The time frame she mentioned could have been after Joey disappeared and before the truck was found. After finding this information, Detective Butcher went back and spoke to Mario again. This time she found him at a local jail. He came clean to her about the fraud he had been committing. He told her that Joey would drive him to places so that he could go shopping, and then he would use the fraudulent checks he had created. He added a whole new part of the story this time, though. He claimed that he made a fraudulent Arizona driver's license, birth certificate, and social security card for Joey, using the information from one of the burglary victims. He also claimed to have given Joey the gun and the phone that were taken during the burglary. Mario was asked what he thought happened to Joey, and he said, "If he's alive, I'd think he'd have more respect." He thought Joey would have called him by now because they were very close. In March of 2001, the detective decided to make another attempt to go out and search the area around where Joey's truck had been found. A cadaver dog was brought out, but again, turned up nothing. In April, Detective Butcher contacted Joey's mom again to see if she had heard anything. She expressed that her birthday had just passed and she didn't hear from Joey. This was very unlike him. Over the years, he had always sent her roses and a card for her birthday. She said, "My heart says I'm not going to see Joey anymore." Detective Butcher also tracked down the girlfriend of Joey's brother-in-law. She said that she had known Joey for about 7 years. She knew him to be responsible and a great guy. She also remembered speaking to Joey on the phone the Sunday before he disappeared. He had asked to borrow her boyfriend's motorcycle, which was weird to her because he had never asked before. During that call, he mentioned to her that he was bored living at TLC. One thing that she remembered about Joey was that he always spoke about how much he loved Amy, and she didn't think that he would have just left to start a new life and leave Amy behind. In July of 2001, almost a year after Joey disappeared, there was a break in the case. There was income being reported under his social security number. This had started back in January, just months after he went missing. They called Rochelle to let her know.
They called me and they said, "We think we might have found him. His social security number is being used at a car wash in a surrounding town outside of Phoenix." So they went over there.
Detective Butcher went to the car wash and spoke to the manager. The manager was able to figure out who was using Joey's social security number. It was an employee who was living in the country illegally.
And they actually had a social security card. So that was something, but they got the person that was using it, and that person said that somebody had sold him Joey's social security card.
The man was nervous, but the detective reassured him that they weren't interested in getting him in trouble. They just wanted to know where he had gotten the fraudulent documents. He said that he purchased a social security card and a resident alien card for $50, but he didn't know the person he had bought them from. While this lead didn't take them to Joey, it's unclear how someone obtained his social security number. Was this just a random scam, or could Mario have been involved since he admittedly was deeply involved in creating forged documents? I asked Rochelle if Joey was known to carry his social security card in his wallet.
Back then he did. He had every, like, his driver's license, his social security number in his wallet. And he had a cell phone also, but they said they couldn't, I mean, again, this is 2000, you know, the year 2000. They couldn't track his phone. They didn't know if it, you know, was just off or dead or what.
Detective Butcher went back and spoke to one of the TLC residents that she had spoken to previously. He was now incarcerated. This time, he had a lot more information to offer. He said that Mario and Francisco both had guns, and Joey crossed someone with a lot of speed. He got the drugs and didn't pay. This person may have been Francisco. He told them that he heard that someone shot Joey, and he asked Detective Butcher if they ever found his truck. He said to look in the mine shafts around where the truck had been found. He told them that he hadn't had this information when he had spoken to them previously. He had come in contact with another TLC resident while incarcerated who gave him this information. Going off this lead, Detective Butcher got a helicopter to go out to the area where the truck was found and take aerial photographs. She wanted to see if they could identify some areas to potentially search. She also contacted the Arizona Mining Inspector's Department to see if they had maps of the old mines in the area. During their search, they did locate a mine, but upon further inspection, it only went back a couple of feet, and there were no signs of anyone inside. It was after this time that the investigation into Joey's disappearance seemed to fizzle out. Without any further solid leads, they just didn't have anywhere else to look. The problem with Joey's case seems to be that he had recently gone to live at TLC, and while he was there, he became acquainted with a bunch of people who were involved in worse things than he was. He also didn't know them very well or for very long before he disappeared. Almost all of the people that Detective Butcher was contacting were in and out of jail and weren't overly fond of speaking to law enforcement. Many of them had things to hide, whether they were connected to Joey's disappearance or not. From reading his file, it was obvious that many people had suspected that Mario was somehow involved in Joey's disappearance. They just couldn't prove it.
And they had their suspicions of a certain person that was in the center with him. His name is Mario, that Joey was kind of hanging with before he came up missing, and they really kind of focused on him for a while. He wouldn't ever say anything. And, you know, the detective just said that she was constantly told that Joey was used as an example, that he had gotten some drugs and didn't pay for it, so they were using him as an example of what happens when you do that. But she said she couldn't arrest him on just the suspicions she had. You know, everybody was pretty much directing her to Mario. And again, she would go everywhere. She would get the leads and she would go. One of the things was really hard for her because they would have one job one week and not have it the next week, or they didn't have homes. You know, like you and I have a stable, regular home, and these people would hop from, you know, home to home each week. So she was tracking them down at their work or, you know, trying to find people. And she just pretty much everything led her back to Mario, but she said she couldn't arrest him or anything with just what she had. I thought too, when they found his social security card at the car wash, that that person that had it would have led them to something, you know, but it was just nothing. So I just kind of, at that point, felt like everybody's not saying anything because they're scared of, you know, who they're dealing with.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. One interesting thing to note is, no one has ever come forward with information placing Joey where his truck was found around the time of his disappearance. It was found off of the highway, and if he had just gotten stuck, he could have walked somewhere to get assistance.
But they did a lot of research on that. They pulled the cameras from the convenience stores down by the raceway to see if they could get any pictures of him, you know, in the convenience stores or anything, but those cameras, they record over soon after, you know, when they get full. So they couldn't pull the pictures from that time frame when his truck was down there. They did a lot of research. And Detective Butcher promised me one day, I had gone in to talk to her, and she communicated. I mean, she's a busy person, and, you know, she may not have called me back right away, but she would always call me back. And one time I went in, it was something that had come up, and I talked to her, and she promised me, she said, we'll never give up on this case. But her thoughts were that somebody would get in trouble, get arrested, and they would make a deal to get lesser time if they, you know, solved Joey's case. And it's been 18 years and that hasn't happened. So I think in her gut, she really felt that Mario had something to do with it, and that he would get arrested and, you know, say something, or somebody that was with Mario would say something. And it hasn't happened.
For Rochelle, one thing that sticks out in her mind that makes her think something bad happened to Joey is that it was an important day when he disappeared. He loved Amy, and he was due to call that night and ask her how her first day of kindergarten had gone.
It was Amy's first day of kindergarten, and he was going to call that night to talk to her about, you know, how school was. And that's one thing, you know, he was really working on getting clean, and Amy, he just loves Amy. And I just knew that when he didn't call, that something was wrong on August 22nd, and he didn't call. They haven't been able to find anything. They did find a body in the lake at Lake Havasu that fit his description, and the clothing was, you know, similar, and they went there and researched all that, but, you know, obviously that wasn't him, so.
One frustration in Joey's case is the lack of physical evidence. They had his truck, but they didn't get anything useful out of it.
And then with no DNA, I watch shows where they solve cases that are 30 years old, but it's with the DNA, you know, that's what Detective Butcher said, is it's tough. There's no DNA, no nothing to really work with. And I really, really pushed for them to process his truck, but they just said that they couldn't do that because everybody had been through it. When I got there, I wasn't able to, I saw them pulling the truck out, you know, the sand dunes there, but I wasn't able to go in and look at it. I didn't get the truck back. And they kept it, but I don't know what's happened to it. I doubt they still have it. I know they said people had taken all kinds of stuff off of it while it was out there the 2 weeks. That was an area that he would frequent sometimes when he was, you know, doing the drugs. And so that's what she said, is it could have just been dumped there, you know, as okay, here, look for him over here, but he's not there, you know. They did bring the dogs out. They had me bring some of his clothing that I still had at the house, you know, that he didn't take to the center with him. And they had the search dogs, you know, sniff them and stuff and then turn them loose out there. But they said there was such a big area to cover. They covered what they could, but there was no way they could have looked everywhere out there.
18 years have passed since Joey was last seen, and his family is convinced that someone out there holds the key to solving this case.
Somebody knows something. I think at the time, they were scared to talk, probably, and that's what the detective said, is they didn't want to get retaliation from Mario or whoever was, you know, involved. Mario had a girlfriend at that time, and I really, really wanted them to keep talking to her. And she left state right after this happened. She moved. And whenever I would follow up with them, I would call all the time for a long time. And I'd say, can you track her down and talk to her? Maybe she knows something. I felt in my gut that she left because she was scared. At one time, Detective Butcher had gone to the jail because he had gotten arrested for something. And she had contacted me and said, this is a chance for me to see if he'll say anything, because she was gonna, that's when she had brought up, you know, a lot of times they'll talk to get lesser time, even if he didn't do it, if somebody he knows did it. She said, now, if he did it, he's probably not going to say anything because it would be a murder case, you know, but he wouldn't say nothing to her about it. She asked him, all kinds of things about Joey, and he wouldn't say anything. But he's in and out of jail, I know, at that time. But I always felt that they could get to the girlfriend. They would probably get some information.
We know that Mario claimed to have made documents for Joey under a false identity. Is it possible that Joey could have walked away from his life? Could he have gone this many years without contacting anyone?
Well, the detective said there would definitely have been some kind of activity, you know, either with his banking or being arrested. She said, you know, with the drug lifestyle, he would have been arrested for something. Nothing's ever surfaced. And then after a period of time, you know, I always waited for him to come through the door. You know, when you don't have that closure, you just wait for them to just come through the door.
Rochelle always wanted to get Joey's story out there with the hope that a lead would come in, but she wasn't ever able to get media attention to his story. I can see in his file that the detective tried too, but there just was never any interest.
I wanted it to go on the news. I wanted it to go on, you know, different talk shows. But again, I think with the reason of the drug tie-in, I couldn't get the media. Not that the detective didn't work on it. She definitely did. I just couldn't get it out there. He was a father. He's a husband. He's a son, you know? He's a person. And I couldn't get anybody to put it out there. Even if it was just a few minutes with his picture and, you know, if you see this person, please contact, you know, Detective Butcher. I couldn't get anything. You know, and what they were telling me is, well, after a period of time, well, you know, a lot of times the way these are solved too is if there's hunters out there, you know, they'll find the bones or because, you know, Phoenix is desert. There's so many different places that Mario or whoever could have put him. And they said sometimes they get solved that way with the hunters out there. They find the bones and that's not ever happened.
Eventually, the steps were taken to have Joey declared deceased.
You know, I always had that hope. She said, no, he's gone. Rochelle, he's gone. So she gave me the paperwork and they did declare him deceased. But they've never solved the case.
The past 18 years have been hard for everyone who loved Joey. Rochelle spoke about watching Amy grow up without her father.
It's been tough even today, you know. We think about him every day. You don't have that closure. Like I said, I wait, you know, for a long, long, long time. I know now he won't be coming through the door, but for a long time I waited. I just said, he'll be coming through that door. And Amy was only six, and she has really a lot of memories with him. You know, she remembers, and he just loved her so much, and it's been hard for her. She's grown up without him. You know, she's got, you know, a daughter, a little girl now that Joey's missing out on his granddaughter, and his kids in Mississippi have kids, and he's missing all that, you know, and they miss having him here to see that. She got married, you know, and he wasn't there, and she talks about him a lot, even though he wasn't there, you know, since she was six. But she has all those good memories, and she would like to see closure on it too. She says, you know, Dad's missing this, or I would love for Dad to be able to see this. And he just made some bad choices. And growing up, I have never, ever said anything bad about him to Amy, because he's not a bad person. He had that sickness. You know, I really believe addiction is a sickness. He loved us very much, and it was hard for me to relate, but I know the drug counselor told me that. I told the drug counselor, it's hard for me. You know, I would talk to them at the rehab place, and they said, it's hard to relate when you haven't done the drugs. But the first thing these people think about when they wake up is how, when, and where they're going to get their drugs. Because I would say he's got a wife that loves him. He's got a beautiful little girl. We have a beautiful home. What's wrong? And they said, you just don't understand. And I didn't.
I also spoke to Amy. She now has a little girl of her own. She told me what the past 18 years have been like for her and what she remembers about her dad.
I don't remember much about him, but I do have small memories, like going fishing with him and going to the deer farm and different little things. I mean, it's just hard when you have a kid and, you know, she's missing a grandparent and he doesn't get to see her grow up or me get married or me finish my schooling. And it makes me angry that, you know, all these people get their cases solved and they get media coverage and they get different things that we've never gotten. And I know that it's, you know, because of his drug use, but that doesn't make him any less of a human being than other people. And I remember being in fourth, fifth grade, middle school, high school, and people asking, you know, what happened to your father? How am I going to explain, you know, my situation and what happened when I don't even know? So I just remember always getting those questions when I was young too, and just not knowing how to answer them, not knowing what to say, not knowing how people are going to judge what I say. It's very difficult. And it's difficult to only be able to say, you know, my dad's missing and not have any other answers.
So what happened to Joey on August 22nd, 2000? Was his disappearance some elaborate plan to walk away from his life? Did he go out to the desert to use drugs and something happened out there? Or was it, as the detective and his family have always believed, that his new friends at the transitional living facility had something to do with his disappearance? Joey made that step to try to get clean, and in the process he got involved with people who were in and out of jail. But whether or not they're involved in his disappearance, we can't be sure. The suspicions that the detective had were never enough to move forward with any charges. But Joey's family is hopeful that someone out there knows something and will come forward with more information. If you have information regarding the disappearance of Joey Gale Ledlow, please contact the Phoenix Police Department Missing Persons Unit at 602-534-2121. Or you can send an email to phoenix.tips.ppd@phoenix.gov. At the time of Joey's disappearance, he was described as 5'10" tall, weighing approximately 160 pounds, with brown hair and green eyes. Joey also had multiple tattoos. He was last seen wearing blue Levi jeans and a t-shirt.
You know, Amy knows that he loved her so much. And, you know, I never, ever say anything bad about him because he loves her so much. But it's so hard. I mean, towards the time that he came up missing, it was hard because he was trying to get straightened out. But then I saw the people in the center, you know, that he started hanging with that were trouble, you know, and I'm just like, what road are we going to go down here? You know, I just wanted him to get better, but I didn't know that he was going to, you know, I know that in my heart he was working on getting clean. It's just, I think he started hanging with the wrong crowd that was in there. And that's, you know, that was what happened.
That brings us to the end of episode 141. I'd like to thank Amy and Rochelle for taking the time to speak with me. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from Georgia. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.